Hello, and welcome to episode 71 of Cavalytics. Cavalytics is a show about the NBA champion Cleveland Cavaliers with a focus on statistical analysis. And the Cavs have gifted us at least two more days of that title with their effort last night. Against all odds, they won Game 4 of the NBA Finals in record-setting fashion, dropping 137 points on the Warriors in a 137-116 victory. The series shifts back to Oakland for Game 5, which is Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I am Keith Carter, a lifelong Cavs fan living in San Francisco. My usual co-host, Arnav Chabra, is unavailable today, so today's effort will be a solo one. I'm a little bit hoarse after screaming at my TV last night, and then naturally after the game, I went out to a San Francisco bar for an adult beverage decked out in my Cavs gear, so if my voice wavers a bit, you'll have to forgive me. I'd also like to ask forgiveness for not doing shows after games 2 and 3 of the finals. The issue was partly that Arnav was unavailable, but if I'm being completely honest, it was mostly because I was bummed by the results. I just didn't know what to say about the pummeling the Warriors were putting on the Cavs. Anyway, feeling a bit better now is time, and last night's win seems to heal many wounds. On today's show, I'm going to recap last night's victory and discuss whether there are any signs that the Cavs can win a tough Game 5 at Golden State. But before I get there, you can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at cavalyticsnba. I've been pretty shamelessly imploring our listeners for a while now to give us a follow on Twitter. I tweet statistical tidbits and thoughts generally, and during games I tweet fairly profusely, a combination of stats stuff, but also other observations and thoughts I'm having. I'm not always proud of everything I say on that medium, but I think it makes for a decent follow. And if you don't believe me, take it from a fellow listener. Someone emailed us today and said, I agree that your live tweeting of Cavs playoff games does make you a rather compelling Twitter follow. Now when you say it on the show, you could claim that you've heard a real fan tell you. So there you have it. We're the best follow on Twitter, obviously. So let's get to it. The Cavs won in pretty impressive fashion last night. They beat the Warriors by 21. Kyrie had he was probably the player of the game. He had 40 points. LeBron James himself wasn't bad. He had 31. Kevin Love had 23. There's a lot to sort of unpack here. A number of records were broken. First, the Cavs scored 49 points in the first quarter. That was a NBA Finals record. Could have been even better had they shot their free throws better. They missed 8 free throws in the first quarter. Had they made just 3 of those 8 misses, they would have broken the record for most points in any quarter in NBA playoffs history. That record is 51 by the Lakers in the 1962 Western Division Finals. So they didn't quite get there, but pretty close, and you could just blame the free throw shooting. They also scored 86 points and a half. That was a NBA playoffs record. They scored 24, or they made 24 three-pointers in a game. That is an NBA playoffs record. The Warriors had set that record in Game 2 of this series. The Warriors made 18 three-pointers in Game 2, and that was a then-NBA playoffs record, but the Cavs broke it 5 days later, smashing it, really. They made 24 three-pointers in 45 attempts last night, which is 53%. Yes, 53%. And the final record that was broken last night is LeBron James had a triple-double. He had 31 points, 11 assists, 10 rebounds, only 2 turnovers. That doesn't matter. That's apropos to nothing, I guess, concerning triple-doubles. But in any case, that was his 9th finals triple-double. That broke his tie with Magic Johnson. They both had 8. In third place, there are a bunch of people with 2 finals triple-doubles, but nobody else has more than 2. So pretty good company there. And yeah, I mean, that's just an incredible record for LeBron there. Some other stats stuff. The Cavs' three-point shooting is generally getting better the further the series goes along. If you look at the percentage of points the Cavs have scored on three-pointers on a game-by-game basis in the series, in Game 1, they scored 36% of their points on threes. In Game 2, 21%. In Game 3, 32%. And in Game 4, last night's game, they scored 53% of their points on three-pointers. That is good and is something the Cavs are going to need to keep doing. After relying heavily on two-point shots earlier in the series, in games 1 and 2, the Cavs attempted just 36% and 29% of their shots from beyond the arc. Over the last two games, they've sort of dramatically increased their three-point attempts. So I think it was 48.9% of their shots in game 3 came from beyond the arc. And last night, 51.7% of their shots came from beyond the arc. So the Cavs are really at their best when they're bombing away from three, and they've done a great job the last two games getting out there. Honestly, the Cavs outplayed the Warriors in game 3. I'll get into a little bit about like what I think is going to happen for the rest of the series, but I do think the Cavs outplayed the Warriors in game 3 and should have won game 3. They scored 33 points in that third quarter of game 3, where they really sort of took control of the game. They outscored the Warriors 33-22. The end of the third quarter in Game 3 was one of the more spectacular stretches of Cavaliers basketball we've seen over the last 3 years. It was just a really fun moment. But the Cavs were just not that good from three in that quarter. If they had made just a few of their misses there, they would have easily won that game and won it going away. But they just, they weren't making open threes. So, sort of a bummer there. But in any case, the Cavs are definitely doing a better job creating three-pointers for themselves, and you have to hope that the make rate continues to stay high. Back to game 4. Kyrie Irving posted the highest usage rate of the game. He had a 33.2% usage rate. So that means that while he was on the floor, he was using 33.2% of the Cavs' possessions. Kevin Durant had the highest for the Warriors at 32%. Steph Curry has not been great really for much of this series. He was okay in game 3 so let me just go through it. So last night Steph Curry scored 14 points on 13 shots. That's his lowest point total of this year's playoffs. He posted a super low usage percentage as well, just 21.8%, which is his second lowest of the playoffs. His lowest was so last night was 21.8%. His lowest was 21.5% in game 2. So basically the exact same thing. In game 3, he scored 26 points on 8 of 19. So, we're not seeing the make rates from Steph that we've seen before. Game 2, he scored 32 points, but he was 7 of 17. And game 1 was probably his best game. He had 28 points on 11 of 22 shooting. Curry's been good this series, but he hasn't been his sort of all-world self that he has been during the regular season the last 3 years. It's interesting. The Cavs seemed to have figured out something to at least make him human. And if they can continue to do that, especially if they can make him human in the way that they did last night, which was, he just objectively played fairly poorly. He was a minus 25 last night, team low minus 25, and just didn't look great out there. 4 of 13 is just not the Steph that we're all used to seeing. 2 of 9 from 3, 4 turnovers. He did have 10 assists. In terms of contested versus uncontested shots, the disparity last night was pretty glaring. The Warriors took, the Warriors took 57 shots and 57 contested shots, and they took 30 uncontested shots. 34.5% of their shots were uncontested. On the flip side, the Cavs took 44% of their shots were uncontested. Really not doing well here. They had 44 uncontested shots, 43 contested shots. So over half of their shots were uncontested. So again, 34.5% of the Warriors shots were uncontested. 50.6% of the Cavs shots were uncontested. Obviously, making uncontested shots is easier than making contested shots. And if the Cavs can keep a ratio disparity like that, they should be in good shape. Maybe the most surprising stat of the night is Klay Thompson was 1 of 6 from three. Sorry, that's not right. Klay Thompson was 1 of 6 on uncontested shots, and Steph Curry was 0 for 5 on uncontested shots. So those two combined for 1 for 11, 9% on uncontested shots. If those guys can't make uncontested shots, the Cavs are going to just generally be in good shape. I don't really expect that to continue. I think the Warriors were sort of unsustainably unlucky last night, but the Cavs are able have basically figured out something that can make those guys struggle a little bit. And if they're able to continue that, that would be great. So I'd like to talk about coaching a little bit here. Steve Kerr continues to be a little bit slow in adjusting to various things the Cavs are doing. The main thing that has surprised me for 3 years running now is his extreme hesitation to play his so-called death lineup. So for those who don't know, the Warriors' death lineup for the last 3 years has basically been the lineup where they replace their center with Andre Iguodala and play Draymond Green at center. So for this year's team, that means Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Kevin Durant, and Andre Iguodala are on the court at the same time. In previous years, it was that same group except switched Durant for Harrison Barnes. And that lineup for the last 3 years has been by far their best. In the finals this year, in four games, that lineup is seeing an average of 4.2 minutes per game. It is by far their best lineup. They are their plus minus is 5.8. Last night, that lineup played 5.1 minutes, and their plus minus was 6.0. So it was, again, by far their best lineup. To put that in perspective, their starters, Curry, Durant, Green, Pachulia, and Thompson, played 12.5 minutes, and their plus minus was minus 12. So it doesn't make sense to me that Kerr doesn't play that lineup more. I think Iguodala might be a little bit hurt. He was in the last round, but I mean, to the extent he can play, he is playing. I mean, he was great in game three. He played 21 minutes last night. Yeah, Kerr just doesn't seem to want to use his best lineup now for 3 years in a row. Maybe he thinks it wears down Draymond Green. Maybe he thinks Iggy is going to somehow exert more effort and get hurt more. I'm not quite sure what's going on there, but his sort of refusal to get the best group of five on the court with like some sort of regularity is just bizarre to me. I don't know what's going on there. Maybe some Warriors fans have some sort of insight there, but to me, it's just like completely confounding. He just seems like he's reactionary to the Cavs, and his refusal to play Draymond at center is just kind of confusing. As for the Cavs side, the Cavs' biggest problem this series, or I don't know, they've had a lot of problems this series, but one of their biggest problems is managing the minutes when LeBron James is off the floor. So in this series, LeBron James has been off the floor for a total of 19 minutes, 40 possessions. The Cavs are giving up their defensive rating during that is 122.5, which is atrocious. Their offensive rating during the minutes when LeBron is off the floor is 70. So just quickly doing the math here, that means the Cavs have a net rating of negative 52.5, in fact, when LeBron James is off the court. That is completely unacceptable. Like, look, I think there's a number of reasons for this. I think the Cavs struggle without James on the floor because James is just such a personality and virtuoso when he is on the floor, and basically everything they do is built around him. So when he's missing, it's hard for them to suddenly adapt some new playmaking style. I think when LeBron is off the floor, Kyrie Irving often tries to do too much. And he tries to do too much in a way that he takes bad shots and often takes bad shots early in the shot clock. So not only is he taking a bad shot and are the Warriors getting a long rebound leading to a fast break, but he's doing it early in the shot clock. So like if LeBron is out for 5 minutes, normally you might have X possessions during that amount of time. Because Kyrie is sort of accelerating things, it's like 1.5X and it's really exacerbating the problem. Just to put a little bit more hair on that. So in minutes where Kyrie Irving is on the floor and Kevin Love and LeBron James is off, that hasn't happened much. There's only been a total of 4 minutes where that's been going on. But the Cavs have a offensive rating of 71.4 and their defensive rating is 171.4. So their net rating is -100. That's right, -100 when Kyrie Irving is off the floor without Love and James. It can't be that bad. I mean, look, there's been some sort of unsustainable bad luck for the Cavs there, but there should be no situation where Kyrie Irving is on the floor without Kevin Love or LeBron James. And twice during last night's game, at the beginning of the second and at the beginning of the fourth quarter, LeBron was resting and Irving was out there and the Warriors like made two quick shots. And then finally, Lou put Love in. But yeah, I think we've seen enough, and maybe it's a small sample size thing, but we've seen enough now to know that putting Irving out there without one of Love or James is not going to work. We had a listener email us about Kyle Korver's defense. Here's what he said. What did you think of Kyle Korver's defense tonight? Obviously, that's not why he is on the floor, but he seemed to play remarkably well for my untrustworthy eye test. Obviously, he had the big block on Clay, and I did see him lose Curry for an open three. But all in all, I thought Kyle performed well and would love to hear your thoughts. So I had been sort of keeping it in the back of my mind that Kyle Korver had been playing defense, and I'd been meaning to look it up. So I'm glad this person emailed because it reminded me to look it up. So Kyle Korver has been off the floor for a total of 77 minutes. I think I'm doing this right. Can this be right? Let me make sure I have this right. So he has been... Okay, so he has been on the floor for 67 minutes in the finals so far. When he is on the floor, the Cavs have a defensive rating of 103.5, which is... stunningly low. The Warriors offensive rating in general is around 120, so that it's 103.5 when Korver is on the floor is really something remarkable. When Korver's off the floor, the Cavs have a defensive rating of 133, so the Cavs are somehow 30 points better on defense with Korver on the floor. Now look, I don't think there's that's happened, and that's what's been going on, and that's sort of incredible that Korver's been able to do that. I don't think that is something that can be expected going forward, but it could be the case that something about having Korver out there causes the Cavs to play better team defense. So, to that listener, good call. He's been incredible defensively. Whether that's going to continue, I somewhat strongly doubt it. But for now, he's been impressive. A few other notes from the box score before I get into some of the meta things about last night's game. J.R. Smith was... quite good. He was 5 of 10, 5 of 9 from 3. He's actually been 5 of 10 his last two games, and he's made 5 threes in each of the last two games, so he is 10 of 19 over the last two games from 3. The Cavs are doing some floppy action to get J.R. Smith open, especially early in the last two games, and what that's doing... When J.R. Smith becomes somebody that the Warriors need to think about covering defensively, it makes it so that the Cavs' three stars, Love, James, and Irving, just getting that incremental amount of space really helps them. And so Kevin Love last night was 6 of 8 from 3, and Irving was 7 of 12. LeBron was 3 of 8. I mean, look, the Cavs set a record for threes in a game, so of course, like, everyone's going to have a bunch of made threes, and the percentage is going to be high, but... getting J.R. Smith going early has really opened things up. Unfortunately, I'm not sure I really trust him to be able. I mean, he's the variance in his performance is so high, but I would certainly look early on in game five to try to get him involved. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And that's a bummer. And, you know, the Cavs are going to have their work cut out for themselves in game five anyway. But I think continuing to try to get him involved is smart. The last thing from the box score is Richard Jefferson. He played 22 minutes last night, 8 points on 2-of-4 shooting. His defense has also been good. He is not great on Kevin Durant, but he's not woeful. And getting him out there for, 18 minutes a game of defense on Kevin Durant frees LeBron to do some other stuff. And that's been a big benefit for the Cavs. Okay, I've somehow made it 20 minutes into the show and have not talked about Draymond Green and the situation with his fouls last night. So in the second quarter, there was a jump ball. And on the jump ball, Draymond Green swung his arm back and hit Iman Shumpert in the face and in the jaw area. The referees called a foul. Initially, it was sort of unclear who the foul was called on. Once it was made clear that the foul was on Draymond Green, Draymond Green did his normal sort of hysterical overreaction. At the same time, Steve Kerr jumped off the bench and started screaming at one of the referees. A technical foul was called. At the time, it was announced that it was on Draymond Green. So Draymond Green had a technical in the second quarter. Later on in the game, third quarter, I don't remember what the situation was, but Draymond Green got called for another technical foul. There was confusion for about 3 or 4 minutes while the referees conferred, and apparently what happened was the technical foul that was called in the first half was actually supposed to be on Steve Kerr, and the official scorer who had marked it down as on Draymond Green got it wrong, and Draymond Green remained in the game. This was much to the displeasure of fans both in the arena and on Twitter. Even later in the game, or it might have been the same time when the second technical foul was called on Draymond Green. There was a foul that Draymond committed where he went up to get a rebound. He ended up sort of on top of Tristan Thompson, who had actually collected the rebound, and his arm came down sort of around his neck area. In the NBA, basically anything above the shoulders is very frequently called a flagrant foul. That one wasn't called a flagrant, and the hit to Iman Shumpert's jaw wasn't called a flagrant. But to the Cavs fans' perspective, you know, Draymond Green had been called for 2 flagrant fouls and 2 technicals and was somehow still in the game. Look, the technical foul thing was a mistake by the referees. Both of the technicals called were not like, I didn't think either of them should have been called technical fouls. The way I normally try to evaluate fouls is you look at a play and then you have to decide sort of in your head, what percentage of the time would that play be called a foul? And both of Draymond's reactions, I thought, were the kind of thing where like 20% or 30% of the time they'd be called a technical foul. And so I do think it was right that he wasn't ejected. By right, I mean sort of morally and ethically so. I think it's right that he wasn't ejected. The officials need to get their stuff together and not create scandals like that. Like, it was pretty outrageous that they messed up that. Messed up the official scoring on that foul. So I'm guessing there'll be some sort of point of emphasis where you can't in arrears change a foul that was called, you know, an hour ago. So we'll see what happens with that. But that happened. There was one final thing. There was a play. I don't remember. It was some sort of loose ball and Zaza Pachulia was diving on the floor and he ended up after the whistle was blown and people were depiling, sort of swinging his arm up, and he hit Iman Shumpert in the groin area. There was some murmuring on Twitter that, you know, that should have been maybe an ejection for Zaza Pachulia or at least technical foul. The officials reviewed it and they didn't see anything, or at least they didn't decide to call a technical foul on that. I don't know. I mean, that could have been a technical, probably should have been. I think the Cavs don't want Pachulia to be ejected or suspended, just because the more he's around, the less likely Kerr is to figure out what every single other person who follows the NBA even a little bit has already figured out, which is that their best lineup is Draymond Green at center. So I don't know. Yeah, be careful what you wish for. If Pachulia gets suspended, then maybe Kerr will figure out like what the right lineup is to do. One other thing on Draymond Green, in a post-game interview, he had a quote that was a little bit nasty. He said, "I don't pay attention to people in Cleveland, honestly. They don't seem to be the sharpest people." That's a little bit low and definitely ill-advised by Draymond Green. Draymond Green, for all of his basketball IQ, the way he comports himself off-court is a little bit subpar. And this just sort of falls into that. I personally don't hate Draymond Green. I like that he is a good interview. I like that he's so fiery. I think his game is particularly impressive. Of course, he's fiercely annoying, and playing against him is really irritating. But I think that he's like one of these guys that makes the NBA fun to watch and makes the NBA product so spectacular. And hopefully, sometime in the next three games, he can completely spaz out and maybe get himself suspended. But the general sort of hate for Draymond Green is a little bit confusing to me. I'm guessing that his comments about the Cleveland fans were related to a lot of the game. People were, the crowd was chanting fairly loudly, "Draymond sucks." And yeah, he was probably irritated by that. But yeah, I mean, no excuse for coming out to the media and saying, "I don't pay attention to people in Cleveland and they're not smart." I mean, that's just lame. He should not do that. As for handicapping the rest of this series, so it's been a lot of chatter about the Cavs are now down 3-1. Some of you may recall that the Cavs were down 3-1 last season and came back to win the NBA Finals 4-3. I don't think that situation, I think that's basically a logical fallacy. So let's say you had a coin flipping contest and you needed to flip heads 8 times. And you start this coin flipping contest, you flip tails twice. And so now you need 8 heads in a row in order to win. And by some, you know, amazing stroke of luck, 1/2 to the 8th, which is, yeah, a 1 in 256 chance, you flip heads 8 times in a row. And then the person says like, "Oh, okay, all right, now we're going to do it again. We're going to play again, and we're going to, you know, we're going to flip a coin 10 times, and if you get 8 heads, you win." You don't want to get down 0-2 again. That's not the right... Just because it happened once, that doesn't mean that, like, that's your best path to victory. And the way that people are talking about the Cavs' position now sounds, in some cases, almost as if they think that this is right where the Cavs wanted to be. That's insane. The Cavs are in deep, deep, deep trouble. I think their chances of winning Game 5, everything else being equal, are something like 15%. If they somehow win Game 5, they'll have some momentum going into Game 6. Game 6 would be at home. I would guess the Cavs would have something like a 50% chance of winning Game 6 at home. And then they would have to go back to Oakland for Game 7. At this point, they would have even more momentum. I would still slightly favor the Warriors in that game. Let's give the Warriors, let's say, a 55% chance, so the Cavs would have a 45% chance. If you multiply that out, that means the Cavs have a like 3% chance of winning the series. That's really low. That means a $1 bet would pay you like $30. I don't think it's going to happen, you just have to sort of, I mean, this is kind of trite as cliche or whatever. The Cavs need to approach this one game at a time. They won Game 4. They should have won Game 2. They seem to have figured a few things out. These games have all been so different and spectacularly interesting in different ways. So it's a little bit hard to sort of draw a trend line. One thing we can say is the Cavs have figured out how to get themselves open at the three-point line. If they can continue making them like they did in last night's game, or, you know, okay, look, they're not going to shoot, whatever, 53% from three again. But if they can make 40% of their threes and keep getting them at the clip that they have been, they have a chance. You just have to hope that the Warriors choke a little bit and, you know, the Cavs can go out and score 125 points. And, you know, if they can win game five, you know, then you take on game six and game seven as they come. I don't think the Cavs are going to win. I think they're going to lose in five, which was my original prediction, but that was just luck. I mean, after they were down 0-3, clearly the most likely outcome was Warriors in four. So we'll just have to see here. I'm looking forward to game five. I feel a little bit less, I guess, generally upset about things. I think the Cavs have represented themselves extremely well over the last game and fairly well over the last two. It is a huge bummer that they couldn't have won game two. If this series was tied at two going back to Golden State, this would be sort of a different thing, but it's not. The Warriors have Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant brought him home in game three, and the Cavs are in a really unfortunate circumstance here. But maybe they can pull it out. I hope they can. That's going to wrap it up for this episode of Cavalytics. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @cavalyticsnba. Thanks for listening, and go Cavs.